If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, buddy. Welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Do you tune in podcasts?
You sure do.
Yeah, okay.
Sure do.
Yeah, that makes sense. We are on a frequency of some sort. Me being a West Texan, my frequency might be a little bit slower than some others in the talking words per minute frequency.
That's too slow.
Okay, I'll speed it up a little bit. So how's it going?
It's going. It feels like it's been a while since we've seen each other, since we've spoken.
I know. We didn't have that instant reaction pod this week because it was a bye week. And I missed not getting to Skype with you at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. I felt a hole in my week. Strangely enough, I watched very little football on Saturday.
I watched quite a bit.
I was otherwise engaged.
I got to see... I got to see most of the Oklahoma State-Texas game.
I wanted to watch that one. I watched 0 seconds of it.
And I caught a little bit of the Georgia-Notre Dame game. And I think there was one or two other ones that I watched a little bit of in the afternoon.
I think the most of a game I watched this weekend was TCU-SMU.
That's right. That was the that was the one. I watched probably the first two quarters of that.
And my acquaintance friend that is an officiator, college football official, he was on that game.
Oh, he was the guy that missed the fact, no. Or one of the guys that missed the fact that a TCU player jerked a helmet off of an SMU player and threw it 40 yards down the field and no one called anything.
He was on that side of the field.
He was right there.
Yes, but that wasn't his call. Like,
call is it?
Really, if we're talking about a
I didn't mean to go Jerry Seinfeld there, sorry.
A foul against an offensive line, defensive line, that's one of the two guys in the middle of the field, the referee, the umpire, the white hat. The referee, not the umpire. And the guy that stands next to him who like keeps the center from snapping the ball. Those two guys are watching the offensive line. I think if it's on the right side, it's the umpire. Sorry, the referee, which doesn't say anything because he's like the crew chief. He's the white hat. He runs everything. He's watching the right side of the line and the quarterback. If he misses an offensive lineman getting his head ripped off, that's like, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Someone totally missed that. And Sonny Dykes was just incensed.
He was steamed.
When they came back from commercial and they couldn't figure out why. And I thought, this is an overreaction. Why in the world? Because it was...
Because it happened on a play where...
It was basically a 14-point swing play.
Because the next play was very nearly a touchdown for TCU.
They scored two plays later. Yeah.
So he was the guy that was... My friend was the guy that was running down the sideline with the TCU running back that didn't call him out of bounds soon enough.
Oh, right. Right. He was way off on that. He was standing right there. Anyway, sorry.
Well,
I don't mean to...
Here's the thing. I don't know what it's like to try to judge when somebody goes out of bounds when you're trying to run full sprint to keep up with them.
Yeah, well, you're also trying not to run into somebody or something that's...
And just a few seconds prior was trying to calm Sonny Dykes down because he's like... He showed that replay several times on the sideline. He's like, Coach, I believe you. I just didn't see it.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, like, to what the point I was trying to make was like, each official has like their assigned... portion of the field they're looking at. Like, he could be looking at the receivers running down the sideline, right, to see if like they're out of bounds or watching for pass interference or holding or anything like that. So he could have his body completely turned away from the offensive line and see a helmet come flying in from nowhere, and he's like, well, I see a helmet, I don't know what happened to get it there, I can't call a foul on it. I just don't know
this I want everybody to know this is the most Spencer has or ever will defend an official.
I just don't
on
know,
this podcast.
I just don't know how that could have happened on the other officials that probably had the assignment to be watching for that.
So if you met an official, you would just all of a sudden, they're just you know, Mike Duffy, if he became your friend, you would defend. Well, you know, he probably just missed it, guys. You know, he really had something to say there. That's why he had to grab him by the jersey there.
And I don't know. I what I'm just saying is we've talked about this before, and I can't remember which game it was. I think it was last season against Houston. You know what? It was probably the same crew, because I think it was something happened along his sideline as well. So maybe I'm just a Mark apologist, but
understandable, I guess.
So here's the thing. He comes into our office clockwork every week, every Tuesday. He's a professional. He's a salesman, and we order a lot of stuff from him. And we're probably one of his biggest clients. It's understandable. Like, we're a large organization, and he's been our rep for like 20 something years. So like, mm-hmm. he comes up to Lubbock. He lives and works out of the Midland Odessa area, and we're one of his clients. He comes up every week. I have not seen him since football season started. But next time I see him, I'm going to ask him about the TCA.
Yeah, like, I'm sure you won't be the first one.
Hey, man, what happened there?
So tell me about the helmet toss.
All right, so for those that may be new to the show as listeners, first we want to thank you for joining us. Thanks for finding us, sticking with us. We are the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm Spencer. Michael, you can follow us on Twitter at 23 Personnel. You can follow me at Punts Suck, two S's there in the middle, and you can follow Michael at Michael_LBK. If you're also somehow interested in a little more punishment, you can read the things we occasionally write on Staking the Plains, stakingplains.com. Fantastic Texas Tech blog managed and run by Seth. All sorts of other great content from basketball with Dan and Michael Labar, baseball with Michael Labar and Keith Patrick. A lot of football content, obviously, from all of us.
Then Brian and I will throw in a beer post every now and then.
Beer and local events, local happenings. Kyle is the statistician of the group. Who wants to leave it? And then there's a weekly post where Seth and Travis get together and discuss everything that's been going on. So that's everybody over at Staking the Plains. Michael, there was some news this week. I don't know how best to tee this up and to transition to this.
No, unfortunately, it's sad news, and I'm sure most of our listeners know about it, but I wanted to at least touch base on losing two great Red Raiders over the last few days, with E.J. Hollab passing on Saturday at the age of 81, and then just yesterday, we're recording on Tuesday, on Monday morning, Andre Emmett was shot outside of his apartment. He was just 37. So I kind of wanted to just throw some stuff around.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Even with me being the correct age to know who Andre Emmett is, I wasn't a super big Tech fan at that time. And of course, you know, Hollab was well before my time. And I, I wanted to just kind of share some facts I've learned through the years about him. I think some of the most significant ones are that he started on both sides of the ball in two Super Bowls, which has never happened before. He started Super Bowl I as a linebacker and then started Super Bowl IV as a center. And, of course, he played both positions at Tech. He was there in 59 and 60. He was a two-time All-American center. He even finished 10th in the Heisman voting in 1960. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's in the Kansas City Chiefs Football Hall of Fame. And he was the first number retired at Tech, number 55. And then just a random bit of trivia about how tough this guy was. He had 20 surgeries in between the years 1957 and 1973.
And those probably weren't very advanced surgeries.
I'm sure they weren't.
They're probably real primitive and real rough on the body.
Right. And then he went back and played football. There's a lot of great stories floating around. 1340, I know that Ryan Hyatt had some good stories about Holub, and I believe it's Carson Robinson's dad on the Rob Rowe show who came on and had some good stories about him. Don Williams had a great article on Lubbock AJ. Labar had a great post on Staking the Plains. So there's a lot of good things to check out there. Obviously a guy that was thought very highly of people here. He was from Lubbock, graduated from Lubbock High, and stayed a part of the Tech program up until the very end, and was actually inducted into the Ring of Honor in 2012 at the Jones. So a big loss. And, you know, on top of that, losing Andre Emmett, who a lot of guys kind of my age and stuff remembered firsthand. And Kyle Jacobson had a great piece on Staking the Plains. I'm not going to say much about it because I want y'all to go read it. So go look it up. And he talks about he was actually a ball boy with the Toros on one of the years that Emmett was there, and talks about that experience. But on that post, he posted a video of the slam dunk championship that I think the McDonald's All-American slam dunk, I forget what year it was, 04, I guess, Emmett's last year. And what was cool about it was, I mean, one, he dominated. I think he got a perfect score, which I don't know had ever happened. And two, at the very end, he ended it with just, you know, he had his arm around some kids, some fans, and he just said, you know, Dre loves the kids. And he has a foundation that he had started called Dreams Really Exist Foundation that he was a big part of and, you know, created. He was a father himself. He dominated at Tech. He had 1,451 points in his junior and senior years. He was a two-time Big 12 scoring champion. He made the all Big 12 first team 3 years in a row, which I don't think anyone's ever done. And he led all scorers with 2,556 points. Oh, I can't even read my writing. I'm sorry, guys. It's either 2,256 or 2,556. It's a very large number. Mm-hmm. And his pro career, you know, he was everywhere. He was overseas. I think he spent some time with the Grizzlies and the Nets. But he had recently landed in the Big Three league where you've got 3-on-3, a lot of former pro players. Well, I mean, they're all pro players. And his team was called Three's Company, which I think was really great. And he was in talks for winning the MVP of that league this year. So he was doing really well. And, you know, you hate to see that happen to anyone. And especially when he's one of us, it just hurts that much more. But I didn't know if you had more to add, Spencer. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to kind of take over there, but it was,
No.
So I just had all these facts and things that were so interesting about these guys. And I wanted to celebrate them and try to get them out there.
So Emmett played before my fandom for Texas Tech started. I don't have much historical knowledge really on either of these players, but it's obviously a sad situation when somebody is, one, murdered, but two, like such a relatively young age, and you had just said he had just become a father. And it's just, you know, that much more for Texas Tech fans, as he was a great Red Raider. So,
yeah. So, you know, hate to hear that about these guys, and we hope that the families can cope as best as they can through these difficult situations.
Yeah. So to move on, however way that we can, it's never like an easy one to move on from, but there was some news that broke this afternoon that Nerins Odiase and the Phoenix Suns have reached an agreement to sign a rookie, to sign Odiase to a training camp contract. He would be the second Texas Tech Red Raider to be joining the Phoenix Suns, as he is, as Phoenix signed Tariq Owens to an Exhibit 10 contract earlier this year.
Yeah.
So congrats to Nerins Odiase for continuing his pursuit of playing professionally with the Phoenix Suns.
I know. I wonder, that's what's cool about the NBA. It seems like there's just kind of always a connection to somebody, because I thought Mooney worked out with the Suns too at some point, and I wonder if that was partially because Owens was there. And
he's with the Hawks now, right? Mooney?
You know, I've got to look that up.
It's okay.
I know he was with the Hawks at some point, but I don't know if that's where he landed for sure.
All right. So while you look that up,
yeah, it is the Hawks, June 21st.
Okay. Thanks. Before we get into football, we just want to let you guys, not like in anything just yet, but be aware there could be some changes coming to the 23 Personnel podcast. We're pretty excited about it. I don't know what else to say about it besides you would notice a change and we would notice a change.
Yeah.
In our pockets.
Might be reading some ads.
There may be some sponsorships coming down the road. But before we ever get to any of that, we will preview the game this weekend against Oklahoma Sooners. We had Jay from Red Dirt Sport join us for an interview, a preview. And then we'll obviously get to your questions. Do a little going yard, everybody's favorite segment. And what we learned. But before football, before we talk football, we've got to do our intro.
That's right. We got to get it going.
They go four up top. They throw the fade to Vasher. Caught. Touchdown.
With Tom. Delivered.
Hand off. DeMarcus Fields. Down the sideline. Touchdown. Red Raiders. 97 yards.
Harrell back to throw. Going deep down the sideline for Robert Johnson.
And oh, my.
He's got it. Touchdown. Oh. Red Raiders. Robert Johnson. Touchdown. Red Raiders.
Take a shot to the end zone. Touchdown to Reginald Davis.
All day to throw. Over the top, Jakeem Graham. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Second down now. Deep strike. Got the big man. Country pulls free. And touchdown, Red Raiders. With a second to go.
Let the scoring begin.
Okay, so we want to welcome in Jay from Red Dirt Sport. He joined us last season to do our Oklahoma preview, and we will get to our interview with him in, I guess, right now. All right, buddy, we are joined this week by Jay from Red Dirt Sport to talk about the Oklahoma Sooners. Jay, thanks for carving up some time with us tonight.
Hey, you're welcome. Anytime.
So I think a lot of Tech fans are a little, I would say, concerned or anxious about this game. Well, I don't know if they're so much anxious as they've kind of conceded the fact that this is going to possibly get pretty ugly. The one thing I've heard from some Texas Tech fans that are holding out for some hope are saying that maybe Oklahoma hasn't played anybody yet and we haven't seen them be really tested. What have you seen from the Sooners so far in this three games when they just looked unstoppable?
Like, I think that's an incredibly valid concern because the teams we played, you know, obviously, like, records are or what their records are. They're just not very good teams so far. So you just kind of had to look at Oklahoma versus themselves or versus past versions of the team. And this team offensively, even though it's racking up incredible numbers offensively, the offensive line is nowhere near as good as it was last year. So there's concern along the offensive line on the left-hand side. And there's, you know, some ongoing concern about that leading into the running game being dominated by Hurts. Defensively, we're kind of a little bit high on the cattle, high on the hat right now, but we played good defensively last year and out of conference play. So going into Big 12 play, the defense and the offensive line are major concerns.
So as this is a first conference game for both Texas Tech and Oklahoma, I'm not sure what Texas Tech fans are expecting to be able to learn from this game. From a Sooner standpoint, where are you looking for improvement, or what are you looking at to kind of gauge how well Oklahoma is doing this season?
Getting into conference play, we were looking forward to this matchup with Bowman, particularly because we know he can stretch the field a little bit. And so his injury situation kind of, you know, took some wind out of our sails because we were really counting on this to, like, be a kind of a watershed moment and see how far we've come defensively. So now, you know, with all due respect to Duffy and the Rice transfer, we're kind of looking at it as we need to be sure the offensive line's coming together this week and next week before we head into Texas. And then it's sort of like we're really untested defensively until we head into the Red River Shootout right now. So it's the Bowman injury news kind of, you know, it certainly impacts your season, but it's impacted our season too, because we're, you know, we want to win this game and we want to beat Kansas. We want to get into Texas, but like we're going to be so untested going into that game. We don't know what we have.
Sure. So from a Texas Tech fan standpoint, one, Matt Wells hasn't really said one way or the other who will play quarterback. He's kind of hinted that maybe both will play. I know a lot of Texas Tech fans have a preference on who they'd want to see, especially when you consider Jackson Tyner, the transfer in from Rice. Like, he didn't even start at Rice before he transferred out. And I think he's completed maybe one pass for Texas Tech, and it was in some garbage time. Everybody wants to see Jet Duffy come in and kind of change up the offense. But from a Texas Tech offensive standpoint, where do you think they could have some success, whether it's on the ground or through the air? Where do you think the weakest point of the Sooner defense would be?
Right now it's going to be nickelback and safety. Like, I mean, that's the weak point. Corners are playing a little bit better. So like, it's really, if you're able to stretch the field at all, trying to get deep passes, that's really the weak point of the defense right now. We're kind of sort of really happy with how our front seven has performed, because they're just way, way more aggressive than they have been since Brent Venables left. Because Mike didn't play that attacking style front seven defense. He was more of a read and react. Grinch lets the boys like pin their ears back a little bit. So like, it's still very much a secondary concern with deep shots and slants and covering those kinds of plays.
Okay. So outside of obviously Jalen Hurts, let's say on the Sooner defense for a second, I think most people would be probably familiar with your linebacker, Kenneth Murray. outside of Murray, who would you say Red Raider fans should be on the lookout for as somebody that would be disruptive in the defense? If he's having a good game, then the OU defense is probably going to be pretty solid. Who would that be outside of Murray?
Outside of Murray, you really need to pay attention to two people in particular, and one of them will be Jalen Redmond. He was a defensive end, outside linebacker, kind of tweener prospect in high school, former basketball player who didn't play last year because of blood clotting issues. He had an injury to his lower leg, and it was a really scary situation for him. But it wasn't, it's not a genetic condition, so he was allowed to come back. So he's one that, you know, in that front seven who's starting to play a little bit, he flashes all the time. And the other one, that's going to be Ronnie Perkins. He is an all-everything player, outside, comes in from Missouri. He'll play multiple positions on the defensive line. We use defensive line. He'll come in inside, outside on occasion. But he is just, like, if you type his name into YouTube, you'll find some players where you think, all right, that's a guy who should be playing defense for Oklahoma. Like, he flashes. He'll be an NFL draft pick next year if he chooses to come out.
Okay. So, really, the three guys would be guys that are up front in your defense as part of the front seven, kind of setting the tone for the defense?
Yep.
Okay. So, let's flip over to the offense for a second. I think Texas Tech fans are excited about seeing some progress on the Red Raider defensive side. I think it started last year with the emergence of our linebackers, especially Dakota Allen. But this year you've got Jordan Brooks and Rico Jeffers. Matching up against the Oklahoma offense is no small task, obviously. With Jalen Hurts being all-world everything, whether it's a passer or rusher. And then, you know, past him in terms of rushing, you've got three running backs that are all really close in carries and all really close in yards. Where do you think, if Texas Tech defensively is going to have some success, where would they be getting that against the Oklahoma offense?
Stuffing the run, especially on early downs. Left side of the offensive line, we have a offensive tackle who's got a bit of a bomb arm, Eric Swinson. He's playing through it. There will be opportunities for, you know, to stuff the run a little bit, like, you know, get those kind of good, you know, get to third down and long or third and five. Those opportunities are presenting itself this year because just the offensive line is not as good as it has been. You know, we're replacing four starters. The opportunity certainly is there. Like, if you want to make some, you know, progress, thinking about progress on that offensive defensive line battle, or and maybe like stopping the run a little bit, there's opportunities there.
So how is, I mean, Texas Tech fans are obviously well aware of Lincoln Riley. How has he been able to plug and play these three back-to-back quarterbacks that have just stepped right in and done so well?
It's the system. Like, I have no qualm saying it's a system, because he designs everything in such a way where the defense has no choice but to leave an area of the field either unopened or covered in a severe mismatch. So how he schemes against defensive coordinators, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. So it's totally a system. Like, anyone who says it's not a system is lying. But he's just, like, he's such an offensive-oriented person. Like, I can't think of how he does this spatially. Like, when he looks at a defense, he knows what the defensive coordinator is likely to do. And so he just counterplays it. you know, through tendencies and through kind of setting up plays, like in the beginning of the game, and that he just schemes it. Like, and that's kind of the issue with him, is that it's not so much the good plays, but you, we all have this kind of feeling of Lincoln. He's good for one or two series a game where he just kind of outthinks himself. And that's just kind of how he is. Like, it's just, he'll outthink himself so much that we'll have a few drives a game where you're just like, what the heck was that play call? Mm-hmm. And it's just, sometimes he's too smart for his own good is basically our feelings on Lincoln.
Sure. Okay, so same question I asked about your defense. On the offense, outside of Jalen Hurts, if this person's having a good game, the offense is doing well, who would that be?
I mean,
is it one of the running backs, or is it one of the, like, is it Charleston Rambo or CeeDee Lamb, or is it just like anybody can go off and just have a great day?
Like, I don't want to be a dick or anything, but it's kind of like, it's a pick your poison situation. If I'd say outside of Hurts, if CeeDee Lamb has four catches for 100 yards, you're having a bad day. Because everything else is open. Like, if he has a good day receiving the ball, Katie bar the door, everything's working. Because he's good for, you know, two or three catches a game. But if he has five or six catches, multiple touchdowns, it's a bad day for Tech.
Yeah, so through three games, CeeDee Lamb has nine receptions. And 229 yards. So he's averaging 25 yards a catch. If he's got six catches, I mean, he's pushing 150. If he just keeping with his average. There's nobody that I look at the offensive side for the Sooners and say, if you take away this person, you've got a great shot. Because say it's Hurts, right? Say you limit him on the ground. You've got the three running backs behind him that have combined for nearly, 800 yards themselves?
Right.
If you stop Charleston Rambo, then you've got CeeDee Lamb. If you stop Lamb, you've got Rambo, or you've got, you know, guys on the inside like Basquin or Calcaterra. I mean, it just, to go back to what you said, I mean, if you take away one person, you're not going to, I don't think Oklahoma's going to really feel it if you just get one person. You have to get, like, the offense is going to have an off day, or they're going to have to be turning the ball over more than they have so far. Special teams for Tech are going to have to be, you know, really solid and force Oklahoma to drive the length of the field. Although we saw last week against Arizona, they were able to do nearly 200 yards in two drives against us towards the end of the game when the defense was gassed. I don't know how long the defensive stamina will uphold in Norman. I'm willing to bet it doesn't last as long as it did in Arizona. I just don't know where you look against the Sooner offense and say, if you focus on this guy, you've got a great shot. So, right now the line is creeping up. I think it's, Oklahoma minus 25 or 25 and a half. Personally, I think that feels a little low. What's your read on the game and give us a prediction for how Saturday morning is going to go for the Sooners.
Like, looking at the game, like I said earlier, I was really looking forward to the game because I thought, you know, Alan Bowman coming in, and I was really excited about Matt Wells, but seems like some of the offense is stuttering on the install for Tech, coming in with the new staff, which should be normal. I think the line is probably about right because I fully expect Tech to score some points. If not early, it's probably late. So I was thinking something probably along the lines of 49-24 like right on the line, maybe like a little bit higher, 56, 24, something like that. I think the line is pretty spot on for how I think the teams match up.
Well, all right, man, we'll see how this goes down this weekend. I think we've seen enough ads to know the game will be on Fox at 11. Some of the Tech fans are a little frustrated, but not much you can do when, you know, the ad plays for 30 seconds and the first 25 seconds are let's go watch the Sooners. Let's go watch Jalen Hurts take on Texas Tech. Let's go watch the Sooners. So I want to thank you for your time, Jay. Good luck to the Sooners this weekend, and we will catch you next time, possibly next season. We'll see.
All right. Thank you, Spencer.
All right, man. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. We want to thank Jay from Red Dirt Sport for joining us. Michael, outlook for this weekend, not so rosy.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. Thanks, Jay. By the way, I didn't actually say that yet. And follow him at Red Dirt Sport on the Twitter. It confirms a lot of things that we were worried about anyway. And I think that the questions you asked him and the way you framed him and the way he answered them, both of you guys kind of know how this game's going to go. And I think both of you feel the same way about it.
For a team coming into a game as talented and as favored as Oklahoma is, Jay is like a real down to earth guy.
Yeah.
Like he's not like rolling in your face douchey about it, but he also did say not to be a dick, but if this doesn't work, you're going to be in trouble.
Good luck trying to stop.
Which is fine.
Six of these offensive weapons.
It's kind of understood. But there were a couple things that came up in our conversation that I wanted to touch on. One area of concern for Jay for the Sooners would be the offensive line. He said specifically on the left side, one of their players, he said, is playing with a bum arm.
Yeah, I saw that.
So your defensive line and or linebackers may be able to get in there and disrupt some things, whether it's the passing game by creating a little pressure on Jalen Hurts or blowing up a run every now and then. It's difficult though because of the caliber of athletes they have. He said, obviously you just listened to that, but if Texas Tech is going to have success on the defensive side, it's going to be because the offensive line isn't playing all that well.
Right. And that's something we can hang our hat on. I believe is it Howard who plays on that side usually?
I think it's Washington.
It's Washington? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which is where I think you would feel
more confident, I would think.
The most confident is you've got Broderick Washington on that side of the line that he's pointed to as struggling so far.
And he can really disrupt some things for sure mm-hmm. on his own. That's something you can hang your hat on. A couple of the things that were interesting to me were his kind of lack of confidence in the nickel position and just their safety position. So the middle of the field, he didn't feel like that was a place that their defense really shined. And of course, you know, their defense, they've got a new coach. They're going through some growing pains themselves. And he was really looking forward to Bowman slinging it around to try to get the corners some work and see how they're actually going to do. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was, an interesting take to be disappointed that the starting QB is not going to make the trip.
I've never actually heard an opponent disappointed that they weren't going to get your starting quarterback.
Yeah.
But that's a luxury you can have
when you're OU
talented as Oklahoma is.
So that means the middle of the field could essentially be open, which is something that we've been harping on for weeks now.
I was about to say, that's what we've talked about. I think going into Oklahoma against Arizona, we said the seams should be open.
Sure. Yeah.
And you had some success over the middle, whether it was McLean Mannix or TJ Vasher coming across the middle.
Maybe even rigged in a time or two,
mm-hmm. but it just didn't ever, it wasn't consistent. Like much of that game was inconsistent for you. But yeah, where do you want to go? Do you want to talk about the Oklahoma offense?
Man, I really think that's where we've got to go. I did want to point out one other thing from Jay that I found really interesting, and I think he's right. He basically said, you know, CeeDee Lamb has four catches, you're having a bad day.
And you are, because check this out, people.
He's averaging like 25 yards a catch.
He is. He has, he only has 9 receptions for the year. And of those 9 receptions, he's gained 229 yards and 3 touchdowns. So every third pass he's caught has been a touchdown. And every third pass he's caught, or no, every pass he's caught has been an average of 25.4 yards per catch.
That's too much.
Yeah. So you can't get the ball to him, but let's skip over Jalen Hurts right now. But I kind of want to go into some total. Let's
completely ignore
the potential Heisman winner for a second. Because their offense is just a juggernaut. I mean, sure, you can take into account, all right, Houston's not that great. They just lost to Tulane. South Dakota, they poured 70 on them. They went on the road and just trounced UCLA, who somehow, some way, got a comeback win over St. Leach the other day.
Okay, oh, hold on. Hold on. Because you brought this up, just really briefly, can we talk about all the Leach fans that came unearthed on Saturday? And oh, like, I miss Leach. Look at that. Look how much fun that is. And like, you lost.
Too soon, bro.
When you threw for 9 touchdowns, they were 700 yards.
They were tweeting and Facebook posting at 10:30 and 11:30, and they should have stayed up for the rest of the games.
Come on.
But all right, sorry. No, what I wanted to point out really quickly was just the total stats from OU. And this is after 3 games. They've only played 3 games. So a lot of these FBS teams have played 4. Mm-hmm. But after only 3 games, OU is number 1 in total offense.
They're total yards.
Yeah. They're number 2 in scoring offense at 55.7 points per game. They're number 7 in passing offense, which seems kind of, you know, I thought they'd be higher than that, but the reason they're not is because they're number 2 in rushing offense at 324.3 yards per game at
how many yards per carry is that?
8.32 yards per carry, my friend.
Ouch.
And they've split a lot of those rushing attempts with 3 running backs. Of course, their leading rusher
and Hurts
is Hurts. But the 3 running backs, you know, I read an article today where they're really proud of the fact that they're able to keep these guys' carries down and keep their workload down. But Trey Sermon has received the majority of the carries, 27 carries, 198 yards, 1 touchdown, 7.3 yards per carry.
He rushes for the least yards per carry
of
the running backs at 7.3.
And then rotated in the number 2 spot is Kennedy Brooks, 17 carries, 177 yards, 1 TD, 10.4 yards per carry. The man averages a first down when he gets the ball. And then transfer Ramondre Stevenson, 21 carries, 182 yards, 3 TDs, 8.7 yards per carry.
So for those that just listened to my conversation with Jay, I did that math incorrectly, and I quickly added up that was 800 yards of rushing between those three. No, it's 600 yards. Or just under 600 yards rushing between those three running backs.
Yeah.
At, what's that, like 8.5 yards per carry?
Oh, it averaged out? Oh, man.
Just the running backs. So, yeah. Like, when Hurts decides he's going to take a play off and not throw it and not run it himself, the OU offense is still getting about 8.5 yards per touch.
8.8.
Yeah, that was in my head.
Yeah, you were right there, man.
So yeah, I'm not confident about stopping anything in the offense. Like, the ground game specifically is what concerns me.
Yeah.
Yes, they have athletes outside, but we've seen teams, if they're able to run the ball at will, there's no reason to throw it. If Oklahoma is gaining, you know, 8.8 yards per carry from a running back or 9.8 yards per carry from Hurts, there's really no reason to throw the ball, except like, I'm tired of messing around. Let's just go score now.
Well, that's what's crazy about all this, because I thought, you know, I didn't realize, you see all the points that they're putting up, and you think that they're going to have way more yards in the air or way more pass attempts. But I mean, let me throw some Hurts stats to you now. We don't need to read all of these. If y'all go to our post, you can see there's quite a few I'm probably going to leave out, but just for comparison's sake, Hurts through three games has only thrown the ball 61 times,
which would be one like a game for a Texas Tech quarterback.
Yeah, Bowman has thrown, for comparison, 154 passes in three games, and
almost exactly three times as much.
Yeah, Bowman, of course, he's only 65.6% accurate, but Hurts is 80.3% accurate, including his first game. His first game against Houston as a Sooner, he had three incompletions and three touchdowns. He had the same amount of incompletions.
Three passing touchdowns. He also had three rushing touchdowns.
He had six total touchdowns. So to go back to what Spencer was saying, the man can pass the ball. And this is something that Matt Wells pointed out too, is this is turning into a much more dangerous version of a Khalil Tate type guy. I think his running style is different, but you can't just rush him and hope that he's going to mess up. I don't know if he's going to. If he's completing 80% of his passes, he has the highest efficiency in the country by 25 points. Number two is the kid from LSU. I think his efficiency was 225, Joe Burrow, and then Hurts was 250.
Hey, do you remember that time when I got on the radio and said that Jalen Hurts wasn't going to be a number one?
Was it going to be in the Heisman conversation?
Yeah.
I vaguely remember that.
This was pre-game one, and I was stupid enough to say that. So if you project his stats, or I'm tracking one thing, is number of incompletions. Game one, he had three incompletions. Game two, he had four. Game three, he had five. He's on track to have six incompletions this week.
On pace for six.
Most incompletions all year in a game. Six. Ooh,
he might go 12 for 18.
He's all, like, the most attempts he's had is in that first game, 23. So if he throws the ball 23 times and has six incompletions, he'll still be 17 of 23.
Well, it,
which is probably what, like 70%.
Yeah. Well, before I get too, I'll try to quit praising Hurts too much, but,
well, hold on. Like, Bowman has more passing yards.
That's true.
By 140.
Yes. But Hurts is also the number two rusher in the country, averaging 9.8 yards per carry. He's rushed 38 times for 373 yards. So by that stat, he's number two in the country on yards per carry. It's crazy.
To go along with his number one passing efficiency rating, which you already talked about.
Yeah, so that's as dual of a dual threat as you can possibly imagine.
And obviously, we don't know who Texas Tech is going to roll out there for starting quarterback.
Right.
It may not matter if the offensive line isn't gelling as well as we would hope. It may not matter if we're turning the ball over, or if the defense just wears down because Oklahoma is just going to run it for 8, 9, 10 yards a carry. So, Michael, you want to get to our predictions?
Yeah. You want me to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I think the line started at 24. I think it's up to 27 at this point. Because when I talked to Jay, I think it was 25. And then I checked it this morning. It was up to 27. I was like, dang, that was a big jump. So he thinks about the 25, 27 point range is about right. He has more. He thinks Texas Tech will be able to score more on the Oklahoma defense than I think either one of us would project. And I think it's because he probably doesn't. Because
we've watched all three of these games.
Well, that, and I think he's kind of, it seems like he's still projecting a Bowman-led offense where it's, I don't know, 2018 Bowman. Although he did see both Alan Bowman and Jet Duffy last season against Oklahoma.
That's right.
Where Jet Duffy had one of his better games of the season. I don't think Texas Tech is going to score into the 20s. So I think like Oklahoma will cover. I don't know what the over-under is. If it's greater than 65, then I'm going to say under. Only because Oklahoma's going to probably possess the ball a whole lot longer than you will. And I think the score will be something like 52-13.
Okay, the official line is 72, is what I've seen on Odd Shark.
I would probably go under.
What's the math on what you just said? 52. Yeah, you'd have to be under.
That's 65.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think ours are going to even out because I think mine's 66 total.
Yeah.
I'm with you. This offense has really struggled, especially the last two games. I know that it may not have been as evident against UTEP, but it sure seemed evident to us that they were missing a lot of opportunities and just not moving the ball like you expect to see against such an opponent. And then, of course, that came back to really bite you in the butt when you are in Arizona against an actual school that has some Power Five athletes. And then it just gets compounded, really. So the fact that they were only able to put up 14 in that game, I really have the same trouble you do that, you know, predicting that they're going to break the 20s in Norman against one of the best teams in the country. Yes, their defense has seen, they've been through some trials and tribulations, and there's some things to expose there probably, but I don't know if Tech will be able to do it. And I know that Tech's going to be playing two quarterbacks. We know that for a fact. We don't know who's going to start, like you said.
It could be either the graduate transfer from Rice that didn't get a lot of playing time at Rice that he's transferring from, or the quarterback that I think most people would want to see but has come out of fall camp as the number three quarterback 2 years in a row.
And who I'm concerned with, you know, with Jay talking so highly of OU's front seven, that's kind of who Duffy likes to throw interceptions to. Just kind of lob them towards a linebacker sometimes. So I don't feel great about that matchup.
Excuse me. Can I just point out in my research, and this is, it's not really a comparison between Duffy and Bowman that we're trying to make. Now, we're not trying to say Duffy should start over Bowman or whatever.
No, sure.
But when you compare Duffy and Bowman stats, and I'm cherry picking here, but I'm taking Bowman versus Power Five because that's who Duffy played against, was all Power Five, all conference opponents. Except for like, I think three attempts versus Houston for Duffy. They have the same number of turnovers. The exact same number of turnovers, the exact same number of touchdowns.
The same number of interceptions or same number of turnovers?
Total turnovers. So
really, okay.
Bowman threw more interceptions.
But had less fumbles.
But had fewer fumbles, whereas Duffy, I think Duffy threw five interceptions and lost three fumbles, whereas Bowman threw seven interceptions and lost one fumble.
Okay. So like you said, it just about evened out.
It evened out. They had the same number of total turnovers, same number of total touchdowns, rushing versus passing. Bowman had more yards, total yards.
Yeah.
Duffy had more yards per play, whether it was rushing or passing.
Well, I think that our perceptions are off. It's hard to keep, it's hard to have a good gauge of what's going on when you have one quarterback who played a half and another quarterback who played another. And it wasn't because of, oh, we just want to make a change and see what's happening. No, it was because of a devastating injury that left him sidelined for a long time. And then, you know, you can question, well, maybe he came back too soon in Ames or whatever you want to think about. But I think that's what's throwing the perception off, is a lot of people, they remember that Duffy was turnover prone, but Bowman was the same number. Bowman's thrown three picks this year.
I'm not sure what fueled that perception. Maybe it's because Bowman's turnovers were spread out over more games. Bowman played in more games than Duffy did. He had more touchdowns. I think everybody felt pretty good about the beginning of the season when he came in, did pretty well against Ole Miss, just destroyed Houston, destroyed Lamar. They had those two games. Like, man, Bowman's pretty dang good for coming as a true freshman backup. Whereas Duffy comes in, you already kind of have a negative taste in your mouth from the suspension, and he's been on campus for a few years and never really done anything. And then in desperate times, he creates some turnovers, and those stick with you. No, I don't have the numbers or whatever to say Duffy's turnovers came at more detrimental times than Bowman. So like you know, Bowman may have thrown two arm punts to end a half, whereas Duffy's were at the end of a drive where you were about to score to tie or take the lead. Like
against Texas, for instance.
Where like they even out on the stat sheet, like as an interception, but Duffy's obviously were a lot more impactful to the outcome of the game, whereas Bowman's could have been the equivalent of an arm punt. I don't have that to say one way or the other. I think that may be what helps people feel a lot more better about Bowman, or feel that Duffy is a lot more turnover prone, when the stats suggest if you look at similar competition, which actually should help Bowman, right? If you take out,
you would think you
know, the cupcakes, they're so similar, except for total yards and yards per play.
I was going to ask you a Michael Scott question. What is the most crucial thing about turnovers?
That you
timing.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't think I ever gave my score prediction.
No, you didn't. I'm sorry.
I'm with you. Our scores are very similar. My only caveat is I think OU's going to end up with 49. TTU 17, that's what I'm throwing out there right now. OU covers. It's the under on the total, as we discussed before. And I don't even know if I could see it, you know, Tech only having 3 or 10 points going into halftime. I think if they get 17, they'll have a late touchdown in the fourth quarter. That's not really going to – you know, we don't want to be downers, but it is what it is. I don't want to use that phrase too much either, but it's just
– You also haven't been this heavy of an underdog in like almost a decade.
I don't think I realize that.
It's like you were a 26-point underdog to some other team. And it may have been the 2011 OU game. I can't remember.
That would make sense.
Number one, and you were on the road, and this was one of Tuberville's
just come off two losses.
Second year, yeah. So yeah. You weren't looking good then. So to get you ready for that game this weekend, you can catch Rob Bro, Carson Robinson, and Michael McDonald on the Countdown to Kickoff. I will be absent this weekend. You can catch this weekend show. It's going to start a little bit later than normal. It's going to start 2 hours before kickoff and go all the way up until kickoff. So it'll be 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday. You can listen to that on 1340 a.m. You can stream it online at kkam.com or through the Talk 1340 app. And because I will be out of town without any kind of cell service, and Michael doesn't want to do this by himself, there will be no Instant Reaction podcast.
I don't even know how to upload it.
I'll leave all this equipment set up right here. You just have to come over here and hit record. How about that?
And just leave it on my table this whole time?
Just spread out for a week.
Well,
Samantha loves it when I do that, by the way.
we'll discuss that. I'm sure my 2-year-old would love to turn some knobs.
And then, yeah, we'll never get it back. It was like there's 1,800 knobs on this
thing. It's fine. They'll be fine.
So you can, if you're interested in following Rob Bro or Carson Robinson, you can follow Rob Bro at Rob Bro Show, B-R-E-A-U-X. Carson Robinson's at Car Rob, K-A-R-R-O-B, _ radio. You can follow Tucker at Tucker Lawrence and the station at Talk 1340. Michael.
Yeah.
Are you ready to get into some questions?
You bet I am.
Nope. Not ready just yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't. I was just kidding. Okay. I'm ready now, though.
Oh, I think I'm ready.
Okay.
Now, are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Who's in the box? Oh, what's in the box?
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Damn it. Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Right. If we can ever just get our producer in line to hit the right buttons at the right times.
Get what you pay for, man.
I know.
We've got some good questions. A couple of good questions. And Ryan Hyatt tweeted out a really great one that got a lot of interaction. I don't know if we'll be able to read everybody's tweets, but.
So I'm going to go back. I'm
going to tease that one.
And go to Alan Corbin's question. He called on the show today. He asked over under on Jet Dovey play action touchdown passes.
Play action touchdown passes, not just passes.
And he said one and a half. One and a half. I'm going to take the under. Hard. I'm going to hammer the under.
I would think the under too, because I think play action, he's going to keep it. He's going to keep it, and he's going to roll out, and then he's going to run. I think there's a better chance of a play action touchdown run than a play action touchdown pass. Does that, could that be a possible thing?
Possibly.
Would you take the over or under on a 1.5
total touchdowns?
Play action touchdown.
I'd still take the under. That's far too specific.
It's a good question, though. It's a good thing to think about. You know they're going to run it.
If my projection is 13 points, 1.5 on total touchdowns, like I'm taking the under if 13 is.
I could technically take the over, but in my scenario, it would be a late game touchdown where Duffy may not even be in, or something crazy could happen on a handoff, muffed punt, that kind of touchdown.
Yeah,
I think I would take the under on that. That's a good line, though. That's a good question.
Okay, sorry.
When we don't know how much he's going to play.
Sure, it could be 80% Jackson Tyner.
Yeah.
I'm having issues with Verizon cell service right now, but I didn't get this. Brian asks, when folding a towel, do you go hamburger then hot dog or hot dog then hamburger?
Okay, here's what I do.
This is riveting stuff.
I take the towel. The towel is
vertical.
Long ways.
Vertical.
It's long. Okay. So I fold it, hot dog.
Wait. So hot dog would be if you folded the two sides together.
No, that's ham. No. You're right. I said the wrong thing. I fold it hamburger. I fold a hamburger again. And then I do the trifold.
Ooh, tricky.
Yeah.
So
my wife and I fold them differently, and it drives both of us insane. Actually, I don't think it bothers her. It bothers me.
Yeah, Samantha and I fold towels differently.
She doesn't do the trifold. She just does like a...
I don't do a trifold, but the way I have it folded, it's... This is not on purpose. It's just how I learned, but like it's set up where it's folded and put on the shelf that you can just grab the towel and pull it off, and it's ready to go onto the hanger. Where hers is folded all nice and neat, but when you pull it off the shelf, you have to completely unfold it to get it on the towel rod. And that drives me. I was like, why do I have to unfold the towel to hang it up? So what I do is I also hold it vertically,
mm-hmm.
and I fold it vertically. So hot dog first.
Okay.
So it's real long and thin. It's tall and thin.
Yes.
And then I fold it twice hamburger style. So it's pretty much a square.
Twice. Yeah,
when
I'm
done with it. But when you pull it off the shelf, it's ready to just be, you do like one unfold and it's hanging on your towel rod.
I like the trifold because it makes it fluffier.
No, for sure. It looks nice.
Yeah, it looks sharp.
Jazz weighed in. She said hamburger than hot dog. So she's with you.
Well, no, because I do hamburger, trifold. I fold it twice.
Brian says his gym does that too, and now I'm feeling in the wrong. I may have to try this. I may have to switch up how I fold.
I think the next thing
you said hamburger trifold.
Yeah.
So they must all be on like you were.
Well, here's what happened. I retweeted this saying, you know, we're about to start our podcast.
Sure.
You know, send some more questions. And Ryan Hyatt saw that and he tweeted out.
Oh, because he doesn't do that. He
quote tweeted me with a question.
It's just helpful because it doesn't show up in our notifications.
I know. I'm trying to find it. I just had it. This is so terrible. This is great. Great job by me here. Great job by me. All right. He says, if you had to eat at one Lubbock fast food place exclusively for a full year, which one would it be? Bonus question. So think of this while you're thinking of that. Which menu item would you select if you could only have one item for a full year from said eatery? Go.
So,
and there's a ton of responses. There's a ton of people with responses. So I don't think we'll be able to read what everybody said, but y'all should go check them out.
Rob Bro's response was Lone Wolf Nachos. Lone Wolf was one of my wife's favorite places to go eat. She was really sad. But one day we drove up to lunch and it was closed. And we thought it was just closed for the day. Roll up to the window. Lone Wolf has permanently closed. She's like, oh no.
I have never eaten Lone Wolf. without beer being involved.
I'm about to say it.
I was so shocked to find out that she was like rolling up there for lunch.
Well, so it started when we lived out there, right? When we got married.
Well, it's open 24 hours too.
We lived in those apartments just outside the loop off 19th. They were called Canyon West. I think they're called Metropolitan West now.
Yeah, they're
not a great complex, but they weren't terrible.
Bacon crust or something. There's always some new apartment name.
But I think it was the closest non-chain restaurant. So there was like a Fazoli's and a Burger King.
There's a Dairy Queen right there,
just north of the complex. But if you got on 19th Street, where the Dairy Queen is, there's also Arby's and then Lone Wolf. She's a fan of bean burritos. She got there, realized that was her favorite bean burritos.
Oh man,
and we ate there a lot. She was, like I said, devastated the day it closed. So, connection to Rob Bro, he said Lone Wolf Nachos. I too enjoy those Lone Wolf Nachos. Those would not be my one item I would order from one place for a year.
We've got, a lot of great entries in here. Alan Corbin, Taco Villa combo burrito.
Those are pretty good. There's something about their meat that it's just off.
Oh man, I like the Villa. Paul with a 3 chili dogs and onions from Der Wiener Schnitzel. A lot of Whataburger. It's really split between Whataburger and Taco Villa. That's the majority of everybody's orders.
Does Wingstop count as fast food? I mean, it's not a sit down. It's not a sit down restaurant like you go and you order from a menu, paper menu. It's more like a Roses where you order and they go make it for you.
Well, but the Roses I hope counts because that's going to be mine. Because they have a drive-through. I almost think a drive-through would almost have to be there for it to be a fast food.
But you can order to go.
You can do that at Chili's. You can do that at Applebee's. You can do that at Cheesecake Factory.
Okay.
Those aren't fast food. You can do it at Buffalo Wild Wings. Yeah, you can do that at a ton of places. So I don't know if Wingstop would qualify. I think you've got to have a drive-through.
Then let me reconsider.
Okay, well, I can go into mine because mine... See, I think we've kind of had this conversation partially before. Mine is Roses, and what I would get is the fajita taco salad.
That actually is a solid choice.
That is an excellent idea because you can, because we've talked about this
before.
You're
convincing me.
Because the two meals I feel like I could eat every day are a cheeseburger or some form of Tex-Mex. And so this would kind of fall under that theory I have of myself, where I've lived out this weird scenario in my head a few times where I can only eat one thing for X amount. So rather than cheeseburger, which I truly love, I would go with the fajita taco salad because...
You get the fajita meat, which is pretty good.
The fajita meat's fantastic. It's the best fast food fajita meat you can get.
Mm-hmm. And you can smell it from...
Yeah, yeah.
And all then, over town.
And then you've got the romaine lettuce, and then you've got beans at the bottom, you've got cheese, you've got guac, you've got sour cream, you've got the whole shell... So you can kind of pick it apart if you're really feeling like, oh, man.
You get some variety.
I don't know.
You can turn that fajita salad into nachos.
All these guys who picked the number two from Whataburger every day.
Hey-o. That's on my list. There were two guys, Red Raiders, Whataburger, number two, Wada size. That may be pushing it. You may kill yourself with cheese, no onions. That would
Chips and queso only.
If I'm just going to Whataburger without a special thing in mind, that's almost my exact order.
Yeah.
I will probably pass on the Wada size, but the number two, cheese, no onions. Sometimes I'll get fancy and add jalapenos or add bacon or add both.
See, now you should do that.
But
if in this scenario, you should do that and then just pick them off if you don't want them. Add anything you can think of to that burger. And then I don't feel like having the bacon today, which that would be weird. Why wouldn't you want the bacon? But maybe you don't want the jalapenos or maybe you don't want the onions. But no, mine would be a Rose's fajita Roses. Taco salad, because on, you know, day 37, you're like, whew, I've gained 17 pounds. I think I'm just going to eat the lettuce today.
290 days.
And then one of those rough days where you're like, I'm going to eat the bowl, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can just take it all. You can pick how you want to eat that meal.
It's great to break the bowl down if you've got like a bowl of salsa too, yeah, and just finish. Oh my goodness.
And then also pour the salsa kind of like dressing, as if you need dressing.
No, it's
there's like, already sour, yeah, cream and guacamole in there.
So when I order that, I usually give my wife the guac. I'm not a big fan of guac, especially raw onions. I'll pass. She loves it. It's easy. I'll also take like most of the sour cream out because I don't know. If I leave the sour cream in and then put a bunch of salsa in it, then it gets like real goopy at the bottom and the end of the salad. It's just okay. Anyways, going yard. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Why would anyone do drugs when they could just mow a lawn?
Okay, so we are running a little bit behind. I will just say, because of there was no going yard last week, or when there wasn't much to report on. I did put down some grass seed this weekend, looking at the forecast and saying, oh, it's going to rain, but hopefully it'll be light enough. It may not wash away. It may have washed away Saturday night. Time will tell.
Yeah, that was quite a bit of rain.
Seed is fairly cheap. So here in a couple of days when it should be growing and it's not, I could say, hey, it probably got washed away. I'll just reapply it. The problem with that, though, is I ordered a specialty blend from, it's called United Seeds from Omaha. It was like a specialty 10-pound bag of a couple of varieties that are supposed to spread, which is not a typical fescue characteristic or activity. Fescue is a clumping grass. It just, you know, fill in around that one seed by just putting out just more grass. Whereas like a Bermuda or a Kentucky bluegrass will spread.
Right.
These are supposed to spread, albeit a lot slower than all of those. So I was excited about that to kind of test that out. Unfortunately, that specialty grass seed may have gotten washed away. There's actually no way for me to tell. I've like gotten down in the grass and like dug through it. I've seen a few seeds, but I can't tell like across the entire yard how much is left. I do have really nice grass seed left over from last year. I could just, you know, next weekend go out there, see that the grass isn't growing, put down another hopper full of grass seed that I know is really good, just doesn't spread. That's all I got.
Well, that was pretty good.
I didn't fall this weekend, which is good.
Also good.
Wrist still hurts like a mother. Every now and then I'll tweak it doing something. I'm like, yep, that thing still hurts. I did say that I went to urgent care and it was not broken.
That's good. That's very good.
But without further testing, there was nothing. It's just, it's dumb. Okay. Are you ready to talk about what we learned?
I am.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
I don't know either. Michael, what did we learn?
I learned that crowlers are a game changer.
You have to define what a crowler is.
A crowler is a 32-ounce can that your local brewer can fill for you and seal it, and you can just take it home with you.
So it's a special micro brew that you can get canned and taken home.
Yeah.
You don't have to consume that at the brewery.
You can buy it. And now, because Texas has gotten with the times, you can, as of September 1st, you can go to your local brewer and get a growler, which, you know, you'd have to bring your own and all that. The great thing about a crowler is you don't have to like haul around a half-gallon jug with you somewhere. If you decide, you know what, man, I really...
Like a mini keg?
Yeah, if you're just kind of out and about and decided, man, I really wish I could... I didn't get to try all the beers I wanted to try at this brewery. Well, I'll just get a crowler of that one I didn't get to try and take it home. We actually did that this weekend. We went to the Docktoberfest celebration at Two Docks.
Mm-hmm.
It was pouring. And so we just had the Oktoberfest beer. We had a couple of those, and they had just come out with this hazy IPA I really wanted to have. And I was like, that's too much to do tonight. But because of the crowler, I could buy it then. And my wife and I each had a glass of beer last night. And so it was just really, it's just a huge game changer because you can, I think it's actually, it doesn't make sense, but I think it may actually help people or stop people from overindulging a little bit because they know if there was a, if you go to some brewery and there's a great beer on tap that you really like, but then, you know, you've already had two or maybe three or whatever, and you're like, ah.
You don't have to force yourself to
drink. No, you can just say, you know what? I can get that to go. And then, and because it's in a crowler, it's going to stay sealed for, I really don't know how long they last. I'd imagine as long as any can of beer would last sealed in your fridge. Because if you take a growler, those seals aren't that great. And they'll start losing some of the carbon dioxide and you'll end up with a flat beer later on. So all that to say, crowlers are fantastic. Game changer. I look forward to going to breweries even more now because I can go, you know, I didn't get to try that IPA. I'll take one to go.
Okay, so this is going to sound weird, but speaking of beers, this especially coming from somebody that doesn't drink beer, Brian wrote a really fantastic article on Oktoberfest beers.
Yes.
Like I said, I don't drink beer. I have no experience with any of this. I was like, this is fantastic. I loved it. It's great. It's on Steak in the Plains if you want to check it out. He gets into a little bit of the history of Oktoberfest, the I guess the rules and regulation of a true Oktoberfest beer, how there's normally only six of them, how the festival lasts only a week, and it ends real early in October, so it runs like the end of September, end of October, so we're coming up on that time. But then he talks about all the beers that you can get, or not all of them, some of his recommendations for those true beers that you would find in Oktoberfest in Munich, but also some local domestic versions, seasonal varieties that just sound fantastic. If I was mm-hmm. a beer drinker, I'd definitely check it out. So, Michael, I do this every time. I need to figure out how to work this stupid board.
No, it's fine. It's great.
Yeah.
We're at the end of it. We went a little long this week, guys. Sorry. Had a lot to cover, and we had a great guest. So thanks for coming on, Jay.
Yeah, so we hope to have a conference podcast, conference opponent every game, every conference game going the rest of the season, which reminds me I need to reach out to some Cowboy podcasters, see if we can get them on. Again, game time this weekend on Fox at 11 a.m., counting to kickoff 9 to 11 this weekend. There will be no post game. I will be out in the woods hunting. I'm excited.
That just sounds terrible.
We're gonna either,
y'all are gonna have a great time, man.
We're gonna do dove and or boar,
and then cook.
Maybe
you're gonna get to cook some stuff. Yeah, possibly. That just sounds like a great time.
Yeah. So for Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks for joining us this week on the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm feeling great.